Welcome back. If you haven't already, go check out the new website, livelifeinmotionpodcast.com. On this week's episode, I talk with Michael Manis. Michael is a former University of South Carolina golfer, and Michael had an incredible amateur career where he won multiple state championships from the age of 8 to 18, and we talked through his career on a personal and a professional level through the game of golf. And, you know, he had some awesome highs, some lows. He struggled mentally there for a while in the game of golf, which can be really trying. But at the end of the day, Michael was persistent. And through all those tough times and amazing times, it has led him to where he is today. And he's really doing some really cool stuff with a partner of his around the game of golf that are bringing together communities and golfers from all over the Southeast to play golf. And his country club that he started is called the Traveling Country Club. And I think you'll really enjoy the episode. I know I really did too. Michael opens up about his career on a personal and a professional level. So before we get into the episode, let's talk about Engineered Sleep real quick. Engineered Sleep is a mattress manufacturer based out of Greenville, South Carolina. If you reach out to them and use promo code LIVE10, you're going to get 10% off your mattress. And as you all know, sleep, I've talked about sleep almost on every episode because it is so important for good health. And it is something a lot of people don't pay enough attention to. And it can just start with your mattress. Getting the right mattress for you is a huge step in the right direction. And the team at Engineered Sleep, that is their main goal. They will work with you to find the right mattress for you, and they'll make that process as easy as possible. So you can either go to their website, engineeredsleep.com, use promo code LIVE10, or go visit them in person at their showroom here in Greenville, South Carolina. Reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep. Get yourself a new mattress, and most importantly, start sleeping and living better. At the end of the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts, give us a nice 5-star review. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Michael Manis. Welcome to Live Life in Motion, where the goal is to bring you conversations that give you the power of education, so you can use those tools to optimize your life on a personal and professional level to better yourself, your community, and those around you. Michael, thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited to hear your story, man. I know I didn't know too much about you before doing some research, and I'm just really excited to learn about your career, the ups and downs, and to where you are today. So how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thank you. So I learned earlier that you're from Ainar, South Carolina, small town. What was, I know your both your parents were kind of in school life. What was your dad? What was he doing?
So my dad was a high school head football coach, was our athletic director there for numerous years. I don't know if it was all the time or not now. But he was the head coach there from like 78 till maybe 99 or 2000, I think. Anyway, so life was good. He was also our golf coach. Ainar was a small town. I was born in 1980. At that point in time, there was no golf course in Ainar. I was able to go to some other courses with my dad. My dad played a lot of golf. He played golf growing up, and it was a big part of his life also. And my mom didn't play much. She'd come out and kind of play. She had a horrible golf swing, and she probably killed me for saying that, but it was probably the ugliest I've ever seen. Ainar was a good spot for me to grow up. There was a big support in the community. We didn't have any family there, so it was just us and our friends and relationships that we kind of made growing up.
Your mom was a principal, right?
She was.
Was she the principal of one of the schools you attended?
She was.
Which one?
I ended up Ainar Annex, I believe, at that point in time. I'm sure it's changed now. Like I said, back then Ainar was a 1A school. Now I think it's a 3A, so since I've been gone. But Ainar Annex or Ainar Elementary, whatever, she was there. So I ended up, I definitely ended up in her office a couple times. I'll never forget, I had a music teacher that wasn't real fond of me, and I always seemed to end up in my mom's office. So that was never a good thing. But
what,
What, you got any siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister, and 6 years younger than I am. She actually ended up playing golf herself at Coastal Carolina.
Nice.
So she was a good golfer. I think she won their conference tournament maybe her freshman or sophomore year, and played a lot. And she still plays a little bit here and there. But
was growing up, was golf always a sport you played?
My dad started me at a young age. I had a club that I actually still have. It's in my son's room now. It was a Ben Hogan 2-iron that my dad cut off from one of his sets. And I actually drug it around. I was told, I don't remember some of this, but I drug it around until I was strong enough to pick it up, basically. So my dad, I guess, you know, he always took me out with him. I remember early parts, we would go to my mom's school. There was a big field out there. And we had a shag bag of balls, and like he'd drop me some balls down, drop him some balls down, and we'd hit and go pick them up. And I remember doing a lot of that because that was before we had a golf course in our mm-hmm. town. So it was another option. And I played other sports. I played, you know, soccer. I played basketball. Wasn't a huge sport in Ainer for us, but I played a lot of baseball growing up. I loved baseball. It was probably one of my favorite sports, and played football for my. You know, played football growing up. And
did your dad want you to play football?
A little bit. I played football for him my freshman year. Played a little bit of quarterback. I kicked and played quarterback. You know, very little contact in any either of those. So that was kind of my goal. But anyway, he you know, and then I got to a point where at that point in time when we got to the high school level of football, my golf game had progressed and I was playing in a bunch of tournaments, missing some during football season. And finally he sat down and I was a big kid. I was 6'4", probably at 15, you know, my freshman year playing football, and played in a playoff game down in Charleston. But we did not win, but I played. But you know, at that point in time, he sat me down, which I'm thankful that he did. I'm sure I miss out on some of the, you know, football stories probably could have had from my senior years. But, like, he pretty much told me, he's like, I'm not going to let you, you know,
yeah,
do half of two sports. Like, I want you to really focus on one. And he gave me the choice. Mm-hmm. I kind of knew at that point in time I wasn't a speed demon, that football probably wasn't going to be the one to go with, and was playing some really, really good golf at that point in time. So
were you number one in the state at this time?
Close. Yeah. I mean, 16, 17, somewhere in there. 17 was when they maybe really officially kept the, like, I think it was the Jayhawks Player of the Year Awards, which mm-hmm. is what I won maybe at 17. Because I don't think you can win it once you're 18. I think you're considered too old. But yeah, I was probably pretty close. And probably not at 15. I mean, Lucas Glover most definitely probably was at that point.
So he was a hell of a junior golfer?
He was incredible. I mean, I look up to him today, but I mean, you talk about a kid growing up in a small town, and Lucas was a taller kid too, like me. So obviously idolized him. And I mean, he was, and still to this day, he's one of the best golfers I've ever laid eyes on.
I think he's like 20 years on tour right now.
Yeah. 20. I saw that the other day. I was looking at his career. He's never lost his card. It's a very impressive golf career he has had.
He has. And he won that major up in New York. Mm-hmm. Bethpage Black, yeah. I think. I mean, I remember still to this day, I think I had the same Nike shoes he had on that day. And I don't know. I felt connected to him.
I love it. I love it.
Do you remember when you were young and you started practicing golf and getting better? Is that something that you kind of remember as like, holy shit, I'm pretty good?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can remember it not like it was yesterday, but I remember, I guess, the feeling of all of a sudden, and I can date back. I remember the first time I broke 70. I think I was 12.
I'm 32. I'm still trying.
And, you know, at 12, I would go to the golf course. You know, this was probably during the summer. I don't remember the time of the year. But I was fortunate at that time. The golf course in Ainer, Rolling Hills, had been built. It was a cool golf club, and it had a big driving range. And, you know, I literally would get a massive bucket of balls, and the pro let me pick the range so I could hit free balls. So when it was time, I would go out, I would get a massive, I mean, I'm talking a huge bucket, probably, you know, 300 balls, and I'd fire through it, take a break, fire through another one of them. So I was really practicing hard. I was taking golf lessons at the time. I think around that point, 12, maybe 11 or 12 is when I actually started working with a guy named Mike Schroeder down at the beach. So I had some, Mike was great because he'd give me one thing to do and he'd be like, go do this. And when you're done with that, like, we'll come on, move to other mm-hmm. stuff. And then a couple things started to click and like, you'd be hitting balls. And I'm like, man, I've hit 10 balls that have done the exact same thing what I'm trying to do. And every, you know, it starts rolling. So I remember that, and I remember taking that to the golf course one day and shooting 69 and being like, all right, let's see what happens. And then I'm pretty sure that summer I had a pretty good summer of playing golf, and then just kind of went from there.
Was Schroeder your first teacher?
Yes, other than my dad. Obviously, my dad taught me the fundamentals and gave me a good base, I would call it. But yes, he was my first.
What you just mentioned, teacher, I think, is almost like spot on for learning golf. If you can just focus on one thing, mm-hmm. get good at it, and then maybe move to another thing, but don't try and bring in all these different things at once.
No. The swing happens like, I mean, snap, you know, you snap your fingers and your swing's over. So, and I'm at fault of it later in life, thinking about too much stuff. But really, mm-hmm. if you can kind of make sure you can do one thing right, probably fix a lot of other things as well.
You see some of the pros too, they find, I know recently it's been like the cut. If they can find a cut off the tee. I think DJ, Dustin Johnson has moved to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Moving through your early years, your junior years, take me through that progression. Then you're like, hey, I'm going to try and go play in college.
Yeah, so, you know, at the age of 12 and 13, like we were just talking about, I was still playing football. I was more than likely still playing baseball. So I was still playing a lot of sports, but playing a lot of summer golf and was having some success, winning some junior tournaments. That kind of fed in throughout, you know, high school. And, you know, at that point in time, you know, fast forward to like ninth grade, I'm playing football for my dad. He's kind of like, pick which one or the other, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of knew at that point in time, all right, golf's going to be what I want to do. I'm probably going to play golf in college. I love golf. I want, like, all I can think about is golf at this point in time. You know, by reading magazines, by practicing. I mean, golf really was life for me at that point in time. I mean, yeah, I went to school and studied and all that, but like, it was straight to the golf course every day. I mean, that was, you know, at that point in time, I didn't per se need a babysitter, but it was my babysitter. I mean, I went out there and played golf, and I had a bunch of guys that were, they'd either played football for my dad or knew my parents or family for a long time that took me under their wing, and I would always play golf with, and, you know, getting these gambling matches with the old guys. And, and, you know, I knew I could do something bigger in golf. I had an opportunity to do something, and, you know, that's what I want to do. And that's, I kind of stuck my head down and moved forward, and, you know, was fortunate to end up playing golf, you know, at that point in time at the University of South Carolina.
Do you remember, like what brand your clubs were?
Yeah,
in your youth years?
So the first set of clubs, and I actually, well, the first set of real, like, name brand clubs, I remember I got a set of Pings when I was young. Dang. For Christmas. That was probably around that age of 12, maybe. And then I worked at the golf course. I bought my first set of Mizunos probably around 14, maybe. And that's really what I used throughout, I would call it high school, and then probably progressed on to some Titleist irons at that point in time, maybe.
But I feel like Mizuno is that secret brand that only really good golfers know about.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're amazing clubs when you're playing good and can hit them in the center of the face, that's for sure.
That's right. So, all right, you end up going to South Carolina playing golf, and it sounds like you had a pretty good freshman year.
I played all right my freshman year. I had some good events, you know, going from Ainer, South Carolina, small town, to Columbia, South Carolina was a bit of a change. But it was fine. Like, you know, golf was still what golf was. I was playing pretty decent. Late that spring, I ended up going to work with another teacher. And it just wasn't a good fit, and I didn't know it at the time. And my game started to deteriorate a little bit. Obviously got frustrated a lot. And then, like, the last term of the spring, I think it was East Regionals, I played awful. Like, worst two rounds of golf I'd played, and I couldn't remember when. And I kind of hit the pause button I didn't hit the pause button. I played in a golf tournament in Charleston, South Carolina. I'll never forget it. My dad went down there with me, and I walked off the golf course. Probably the only time I've ever walked off a golf course. I was playing so bad, and I was just a mess. And I told him, I can't do it. Like, I just can't.
And this is after your freshman year?
Yeah, it was probably right after.
And when you say playing bad, what is that?
I mean, I couldn't keep it on the golf course.
Is it 90? Is it a...
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. I mean, I could, but I was struggling. Breaking 80 was a miracle at that point in time. I was shooting some scores in the 90s, which is, I mean, it didn't make sense.
For a kid that broke 70 at 12.
Yeah, right. And
do you remember your mindset? What was going on in your mind? Were you just searching? Were you trying to figure out what was going on?
Well, that's kind of what happened, right? It went from like, all right, I know what to do. I'm a good player. All of a sudden, I've got no idea what's going on. So how do I fix it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've told people now, I was like, I'd have given anything for like some, like, I'm a huge advocate of the technology we have in golf right now. I think it's phenomenal if used properly. If I'd have had that back then, Mike could have fixed it a little quicker. Mm. You know, all we had was video. So I bounced around teachers, I bounced around ideas.
So you're talking about like TrackMan, thanks to
TrackMan. If we'd had even TrackMan back then, like to give some data, it might could have been solved a little bit quicker. In my mind now, I don't know that for a fact, but I like to believe it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just in search mode. I mean, every day I was just trying to figure it out. And
Think about giving up?
I never thought about giving up because I still knew, you know, even at the lowest of lows, and you know, one of my best friends here, if he was here, he could tell you about it. Like, even my lowest of lows in golf in college, I still knew what I could do. Like, it wasn't that far away if I could just figure it out. Unfortunately, that figuring out, did it come? Maybe. It took a while. Did it ever come to like what I wanted it to be? Maybe not.
Yeah. So, but through your college career, so what was the team like? Were you playing? Were you getting in tournaments? Were you just like almost, I mean, on the team, if you're, you know, I'm sure you had to be almost in a lonely place there at times on the golf team.
Yeah, for sure. So I played a lot my freshman year on the, let's call it varsity team, traveling five, and did that a lot my senior year. Those 2 years in between there, we would play. Actually, I did take a whole semester off and did not touch anything but a sand wedge and a putter. And that's all I could do. That's all my coach would let me do also, but that's all I could do. So I went and I chipped and putted, and that was basically it. So I took a long time away from just hitting balls. And then after that, I kind of slowly got back into hitting. And I mean, I'm almost started from ground zero, like trying to figure out, all right, how do I refigure some feels that I used to have? Because I've lost all those now. Mm-hmm. And that took a while, but we played in like some B team tournaments. So we'd go to some smaller schools and play in their events. And that'd be like your guys that wasn't traveling. So maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. We probably had 12 guys on the team at that point in time.
And for people not to understand, when you have lost your confidence in golf, it is the most frustrating, like lonely feeling. You're giving me hope, though, because you came back from it.
At some point.
Yeah. I lose my swing, and I think, like, the world is ending. Yeah. But then do you think some of that time off helped, just hitting a wedge and a putter?
It helped. I mean, it helped in some other fashions. Like, I got to where I understood putting a lot better and still do to this day, and I understand chipping is probably one of my best deals. So, like, it just gave me a chance to take my brain off of something that was very negative and very... I mean, it wasn't just detrimental to me. It was, as a golfer, it was life. Like, I mean, it was just a bad time for me. It was a very dark place.
What was your personal life like?
I mean, you know, it was, I mean, I still had my roommates and my friends. We went out and obviously partied pretty hard in Colombia. So yeah. you can maybe drown a couple of demons in there. Not proud of that by any means, but I mean, you are in college. It wasn't great. I mean, I was just in a bad place. I mean, I'm sure I was a good friend. I probably had a girlfriend or two back then that would probably say I was an awful person. You know, I mean, It was just a dark place because I'd gone from being, you know, I was on top of, you know, one of the better juniors to come out of the state of South Carolina, and then be so, like, I was non-existent. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, it's not that we didn't have great teammates, but nobody really wants to play golf with you at that point because they're seeing some shots that they don't want to see, mm-hmm. one. And you're embarrassed. Like, I was embarrassed to play golf because I didn't know whether, I mean, I hit a shot one summer because I'd still play a few summer events at the Eastern Amateur, and my roommate was there with me. We were both playing, and he wasn't playing that great, but he was playing pretty, you know, decent. And I was teeing off in front of him, and he watched me. I hit a tree off the tee box that was so far left. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it was the final round of the tournament. I guess I'd made the cut maybe, but somehow. But it was stuff like that to where all of a sudden that would happen, and you're like, I don't know where to go.
Do you remember if it was like the top of your backswing? Was it the takeaway? Was it, what was it?
I wish I could pinpoint it, and I've tried to. Like, you know, sometimes you're like, man, I think that was it. And then you're like, I don't know if that was it. It might have been this. But, I mean, it definitely, you know, there were some things I worked on that just didn't match up. I'm a huge believer, and I think some of that's proven now in golf, is your grip and your club face and all that is a matchup. Like, mm-hmm. and if you go the opposite way, it's just not going to work out for you because it does not match. Or it's going to be a struggle. So I was doing some stuff that did not match up with the way I'd learned to play golf and put the golf club on the back of the ball. So
do you, so time frame, I think this is around 2003, 2002, mm-hmm. you're getting out of college. Did you think, hey, I'm going to go try and play pro, or did you ever think, hey, I'm going to go get a normal job?
Yeah, so I was still stubborn enough where I thought I could still do it.
Props to you.
Yeah, yeah. And I played okay in my senior year in college. Like, saw some signs and, you know, went that I graduated in December from the University of South Carolina, 2003. I think I'd already done it before I graduated, but maybe earlier, maybe November, I'd gone and I got my South American tour card, mm-hmm. In South Florida and played pretty good down there. I think I shot, I don't know, I finished under par for four rounds, probably finished fifth in the qualifier out of, and they were given eight spots. So I was fully exempt to go to the South American tour that a buddy of mine, John Pitt, who played at Vanderbilt, who had already been out and done it, talked me into. And, you know, he was like, come on, we're going to go down there. It's going to be great. At that point in time, it was a part of the Challenge Tour. So there was a little incentive. You know, Challenge Tour at that point in time was what our Korn Ferry Tour is now. So it's kind of a feeder into the European Tour. And
yeah, was that a good experience?
It was. It was a very big learning experience. I mean, I took off in January to, we started in Panama. We played Panama, Guatemala, Costa Rica, back-to-back, you know, 3 weeks back-to-back. So right out of college, I'm by myself in Panama, well, with other golfers in these countries, some kind of third worldish at that point in time. It was very eye-opening. I missed all three cuts, which was kind of a slap in the face to get, you know, get back out. So we can, you know, miss three cuts, come out of the States. I think I played, there's maybe one or two more events, like Bahamas had one, or they might have had two events. My memory's not as good as it used to be.
Was there any money in those events?
Yeah, a winner would probably take home, I don't know, just call it 25 grand. If you made the cut, great. Yeah, I mean, if you were playing good, you couldn't make a ton of, I mean, at that point in time, that was a lot of money for us, but, you know, if you're making cuts, you're just kind of keeping your head above the water. And, you know, all that is really gearing up. Well, that was a good stream into the European Tour if you played well. Mm-hmm. But everything was really kind of like, all right, what can I do to get ready for Q school? What's the best way? I hadn't played that well out of college, so I didn't have club sponsors knocking down my door to pay me to play golf. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and still at that point in time, there was some mini tour guys getting some money. So some of that's changed now. But
what do you mean by that? Getting money from like sponsors?
Say Titleist, you know, came out of school. If you had a good year, you know, they'd sign you and maybe give you 15 grand to help you out to make it on the mini tours until you got your card. I was fortunate enough, Ping, who's always been a great, you know, I don't know what you call it, but they've always supported me, I guess, very well. They jumped on to thankfully give me golf clubs, and I had a good relationship with Titleist, and they gave me golf balls. That was great, but still I didn't have a ton of money to just go play golf. So mm-hmm. I worked in a golf shop and basically saved up money and go to play in events. I'd save up money and go play in events.
With the goal to go to Q school?
With the goal to go to Q school. So I did, you know, over those years, that's 03, just call it 04 by the time actual, you know, professional golf had really started. Mm-hmm. I played from 04 on and off through 2012. Went to Q school probably not all those years, but maybe five, six times in those years, because I also caddied for a little while in there, which we'll get into in a little bit later. But, you know, at that point in time, I played, and I'll give you up until like 05. I played on and off working in a golf shop. I lived in Florence, South Carolina with my friend Greg Jones, who I think I mentioned earlier, who played at Clemson, was on their national championship team. We lived in Florence. It was a great situation. Florence Country Club was awesome. We could practice, play as much as we wanted to. I was still working some at a golf shop. And then finally I missed Q school, I think in 05. And I was like, I'm done. And I got rid of every golf club I had.
Really?
Or everyone that I would use.
Not the first one, man, that your dad got you.
Yeah. So I did that and moved back to Columbia.
What was your mindset then?
I was just frustrated. Like, I'd given it all, and I'd worked, and I guess some of it now looking back, I'd worked so hard to figure it out because it was so bad in college. And like, it would always, you know, yeah, I could kind of, it had gotten better, but like, it would always revert back, but the scores wasn't as higher, but I'd still hit some really bad golf shots that just cost me to not be able to make any money playing golf. So
when you said you went to Q school and you just didn't perform, mm-hmm. so that's when you decided I'm done.
Yeah.
What was, so at Q school, you just played horrible, played bad?
Yeah, I probably shot, I think it was at Florence, actually, because they posted a lot of first stages at Florence Country Club, and it was, you know, I'm sitting there like, all right, hey, if I can just figure it out, like, it's kind of my home course right now, I probably shot, I don't know, 75 every round or something like that, and mm-hmm. didn't come close to making it, and I just had enough. I'd been grinding for a long time, and I was exhausted, mentally exhausted, and I was like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. So I didn't touch a club. I moved to Columbia. A friend of mine gave me a job doing mortgage lending right at about the time the market kind of crashed. So it was a good time to be in mortgage lending. And then I also bartended, just trying to make ends meet to figure sure. out what I was going to do.
How long was that layoff of golf?
It was about a year.
Yeah.
A whole year. I mean, I finally bought some clubs, I think, on eBay. Back then, maybe.
Why did you buy those clubs?
I just wanted to. Some friends of mine were playing a bunch. Like, they were still buddies of mine up there living in Columbia and whatever. And they were kind of playing. I was like, well, I'll get some clubs. And I think I might have, Ping might have sent me some clubs also. Like, I might have sent an email like, hey, I think I might. I probably at that time was not going back to playing. But, like, anyway, just to get some clubs to go play. And I started back playing a little bit. And funny enough, like, it felt better than it ever had. But I mean, that was a big break from golf. Like, I did not mm-hmm. touch a golf club in those periods of time. And
well, I'm thinking, if you started as early as you can remember, you started competitive at 8, say, this is 24, 25. So you've been grinding for 16, 17 years.
Yeah.
Maybe the time off helped.
It might have. I mean, it did something, because I came back and my, like, feels for golf were a little bit kind of what I'd remembered. And, like, I don't know. Looking back, maybe that was something that needed to happen. But, you know, it definitely was a determining factor on what I was going to do moving forward. So I decided, all right, I'm still going to work. I'm going to save some money. And I actually came up and talked to some people up here in Greenville, because I had started dating my wife at the time, or I started dating my wife now. At that time, back in 2006, I think that's right. She was still in school, but she was moving back here. I knew some guys that were playing golf here in Columbia. Also, through that, found a teacher that I really liked and, like, was gaining some traction with. As far as my golf game, a guy by the name of Mark Blackburn, who teaches out of Greystone Country Club now in Birmingham.
And he just had a great year, right?
Yeah, he had an awesome year. I mean, he's taught a lot of guys on tour for a while. I mean, going back to like Heath Slocum, Robert Carlson, Boo Weekly for a little while back in the day. And, you know, more stories of that. But I got introduced to him, and, you know, now he was last year's PGA Tour teacher or PGA of America Teacher of the Year. And games started getting a little bit better. I fortunately found some family friends and some people up here to kind of help me out financially to give it another go. And I did. So
when you bought those clubs on eBay, how long from that moment of buying the clubs to you being like, I'm going to give this another shot?
It was man.
Was it instant? Did you hit pure and iron?
it wasn't instant. Q school that I stopped at would have been probably in late August, I would assume, early September, probably this time of year. I wouldn't say it was for another 18 months after I stopped. So you just call it, I probably got those clubs in August, probably around December of 06 or something like that was when I was like, all right, maybe like it's getting pretty good. I'm better than I was then, so let's maybe give it another go.
Did it almost feel like those junior feels? I think sometimes if people can revert back to like the feels they had when they, the pure love for whatever sport or whatever they're doing, then that can really be great for them moving forward if they're in a rut.
Yeah, for sure. I found, you know, I got some feels that were familiar to me back. Game still wasn't, I mean, looking back, it wasn't awesome. But I'd found my love for the game again. I think that's what taking that completely year off and then, you know, buying a set of clubs on eBay, whatever, and going back at it, like, I started to enjoy golf again. Mm-hmm. And I realized how much I'd hated it. It was a love-hate relationship, I guess I should say, back then. And then it turned into just, I got my passion for the game back and really went to work and, you know, somewhat played pretty decent the next year. I think the following year I qualified for I'd already played in one web.com, Korn Ferry Tour now, what back then was the Nike Tour. I think by that point in time, you know, I'd played one in high school that I qualified into, but in 2007 I qualified for another event on a Monday qualifier up in West Virginia, finished like 16th in it. So like I was playing some good golf, having some decent finishes.
Were you, didn't you say you did some of these events with DJ Dustin Johnson?
Yeah. So I played pretty good. And then here comes old Q school again. And I started not playing as great. Is it a mental thing? Maybe. I don't know. I was playing some good rounds around home, but I wasn't playing very well at tournaments. You know, I was shooting a lot of like 72s, 70s, 74s, which don't really make you any money on mini tours. And I got to Q school and Dustin was down there and he was right out of college. And we had kind of known each other. I was always a little, you know, age group wise, always like a cycle ahead of him. And anyway, we played together, I think two practice rounds, if I remember correctly. And they all kind of blur together to me because it was just, I was blown away. I was like, wow, this guy is unbelievable, you know? And of course, he breezed through Q school. I think he won that site, first stage. And that was the year he got, back then, you could go all the way through and get your tour card. Now it's changed a little bit, but I think he cruised through, got his tour card, and off he was.
Is he the best golfer you've played with? That's a tricky question.
It is a tricky question. Definitely one of them.
Was this around the same time you got in with like Bill Haas and some of those guys?
Yeah, so I knew Bill and I and Jay Jr. Grew up playing a lot of golf together. So we'd always been close. Bill in college would come down and hang out in Carolina with us. So we'd always been friends, even in the summer in college. Like we played in certain events. Bill had a great college career, obviously. That comes without saying. But, you know, he was here and he had, at the time, I guess when I moved back, he was on tour maybe by that point in time. Yeah. That'd be, or at least close to it, or got his tour card anyway. And you know, we were both single per se, we were not married. And so I ended up, fortunately, I moved in with him. He didn't have a roommate, you know, he was gone all the time. I was kind of here and there.
And that was in Greenville?
That was in Greenville, yeah. And we got, and kind of fast forward to, I missed Q School that year. I just spoke about playing with DJ. And for mini tour golf at that point in time, when you're done with Q School, you either go to Florida to play some mini tour events, or either there's just not much in our area, one, because it's cold. So I wasn't really dying to go to Florida because I wasn't playing very well. So I kind of hung out around here and practiced, and was trying to figure out, like, all right, here's where I'm going to start this year. Well, mini tours, again, start kind of slow up here. So we think I had one in February, and then there wasn't another one until maybe end of March. And then after that, it started to kind of ramp up. Well, I'm living with Bill at the time. He's playing, you know, tour. The PGA Tour, he comes home one weekend, whatever happened to he and his caddy, he was like, hey, do you want to go to Houston? So this is when Houston's right before Augusta at that time. And I was like, I didn't have anything going on. So I was like, sure, I'll go. This was 08 now, I think, maybe. And I was like, yeah, I'll go. I'd love to go caddy. He's like, all right, come on, let's go. So, you know, at the time, his agent gets us some flights and we go down to Houston and I caddy. And I had caddied some for buddies like at other stages of Q School, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, I played a lot of golf, so I get it. And, but quickly learned that week, like there was a whole side that I was missing from golf and not understanding, but I wanted to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bill didn't play as great that week. I think he might've missed a cut. Honestly, I think he missed the first four cuts I caddied for him, but we got done. He's like, you want to go caddy at Hilton Head in 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. I was like, sure, I didn't have any tournament. Need to make some money, so let's go.
Yeah.
So
by that time, money in golf is starting to really ramp up, too.
Really ramp up because of Tiger. Like, purses are bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't making any money playing at the time and was getting older. So I was like, let's see. I can make some money here and then maybe play in my off weeks. This is what I did for a while. And play okay. And I'd still go to Q School and miss it. I mean, I missed a PGA Tour qualifier one time on a Monday, even though I probably would have been caddying, but I went and tried the Monday to get in. You know, I missed it by one shot, or I missed in a playoff. But that was like kind of my goal still, like the dream of playing hadn't given mm-hmm. up. So I caddied for Bill, you know, starting there in Houston in 08. I caddied for Bill from there to most of all of 2011.
Live Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Engineered Sleep. Engineered Sleep is a mattress manufacturer, and they are based out of Greenville, South Carolina. They have been making mattresses for as long as I can remember, and their main goal is to make finding the quality mattress for you as easy as possible. They have a showroom in Greenville, but you can also visit them at their website, engineeredsleep.com. If you go to their website, use code LIVE10 and you will get 10% off. As you guys know, sleep is the number one thing you need to focus on for good health. And it all starts with your mattress. So stop putting it on the back burner. Go get yourself a mattress from Engineered Sleep and start living a better life. You mentioned when you were on the course that first time in Houston, there was something there that you were missing. What was that?
I look back on it, and when I was playing really good golf in certain times, it wasn't dumb luck, but it was like there was no strategy to it. So I wanted to learn the strategy, and I finally saw it, you know? I mean, we didn't have a lot of tour books, you know, for mini tour events, mm-hmm. you know, that you see them use on PGA Tour. And all of a sudden, I had this book with all this information and more information I could put into it. And I was like, man, this makes sense. So that was what I figured out. And also, caddying for Bill helped me. Like, Bill is one of the best golfers, one, I've ever been around. But two, his knowledge for how to play golf. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying hitting beautiful golf shots that he does, but how to actually play a golf course. He can break down, and it helped me realize it. I mean, he made me a better caddy, if you want to say.
Are you talking like course management?
Yeah, course management. Just how to play a golf hole. Like, what's the best way to play a golf hole?
And for, I try and tell my buddies who, you know, 20 handicap, 25 handicap, if you can just learn course management, you can shave 8 strokes off your round, mm-hmm. you know, pretty easily for them at that level,
yeah.
For any type of amateur. What was life like in these years caddying on and off? Were you ever really close to thinking, hey, I'm going to get my card, or hey, I'm going to quit? Are they ups and downs?
Yeah, I mean, there were ups and downs. So I would say my career in golf took a back seat for a minute. Not that I wasn't still trying. Like, I was still working with Mark Blackman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was still grinding, but I decided there was a lot of struggles early on. Like, even when I said I had financial help here, and I did, from some great people, close friends, and some I'll never forget, I would still, like, it's not like it was a ton of money to live off of, right? Mm-hmm. So there's still some stresses. Well, now all of a sudden I've got a job, and I'm caddying for a guy who's playing really well, and I'm putting some money in the bank. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to put some money in the bank, and I'm going to keep working to see if I can get a little bit better. I'm around the best players in the world right now. Like, I see it day in and day out. Let me see what I can pick up from them. Still fairly young. And then I'll give it a go when the time's right.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you have any run-ins with Tiger?
Not until later.
Okay.
You know, when I caddied for Bill, we played with Phil Mickelson a lot. I wasn't a huge Phil fan at the time. Like, I was a Tiger guy.
Yeah.
But after we played the first time with Phil, can't remember the first time we played with him off the, it might have been Memorial. But that first, like, I was amazed. Like, he was one of the best guys I'd ever talked to. Would talk to anybody, which I always thought was really neat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't shun people away. And he's just a guy's guy. Like, he was awesome. So, you know, I have another level of respect for Phil Mickelson. But we played with we played with everybody. We just never ran into Tiger, like, and had some good events. Just never really gotten the pairing.
I'm glad Phil, because I was probably similar to you. I was never a really big Phil fan. But recently that he's been, like, been showing his personality a little bit more on social media and Twitter and, you know, in some of these events, I've really started to enjoy Phil.
He's great. I mean, and like I said, I mean, he'll talk about anything with you, sports, you know, whatever you want to talk about. He's ready to go, which is really cool. And he is really good at golf, too.
He is. Are you a lefty?
I'm not.
You're a righty? Okay. Yeah. Dude, and yeah, I mean, his nickname, the lefty, he's now I've grown to get a lot of respect for Phil. But 2011, you and Bill decide you're not going to caddy anymore?
Yeah, so we parted ways kind of midsummer. And I'd started to play a little bit, and I was playing pretty good. And I was like, all right, I'm on, like, let's just take a break. I was going to try to practice a little bit more. I ended up caddying some more later that year for some guys, just to kind of make some extra money while I was doing it. But I was always, like, I had already signed up for Q school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going back, and I was actually playing pretty good.
Pretty good?
I mean, I was back breaking par majority of times I played, and I felt like I could go, you know, I felt like I was ready to go to Q school, or at least even if I wasn't ready, I was gearing up for 2012 because I'd already decided, hey, I'm going to play a full schedule in 2012. Now, back for it. I'm married now at the time. Got married in 2010. We don't have any kids at this time either. So I'm traveling all around. My wife's here in Greenville working. So life had changed a little bit. You know, my head was probably on my shoulders a little bit more than it was back in 07. And so, yeah, that summer we stopped. And, you know, Bill ended up winning the FedEx Cup that year. Had a great year. And played some really good golf. I mean, I got to watch him play a lot of really, really good golf. He's one of the best still to this day. I would one of the best iron players I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think Jay Jr. mentioned if he can get, I think, his putting back a little bit, he should make a comeback on tour.
He should.
How was that 2012 Q school?
So I missed that first one, which was 2011 going in. I didn't play bad. I think I actually missed the first stage by one shot. So that was kind of a kick, but I'd still play pretty good, and I knew I was going to play, so I didn't let it really bog me down. So we went on in 2012, still working with Mark Blackburn. Golf was pretty good. So 2012 for me, I played, had a chance to win a couple mini tour events. Mondayed into my first PGA Tour event at the Greenbrier.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, so for me, one of my goals in my whole life. I wanted to play on PGA Tour, right? I did it.
Nice.
Now, I didn't per se do it all the time, but on Monday did the, you know, PGA Tour event. So it was great. I ended up missing the cut, but like checked the box on some really neat things. Played practice round with Lucas Glover, my, you know, longtime good friend and idol growing up. So mm-hmm. like really cool stuff. Actually, and Jonathan Bird played with us too. So two guys from South Carolina mm-hmm. that I idolized growing up. They were not that much older than me, but really good players. So,
what happened in 2012? When did you, you know, you're playing pretty well. You're Monday qualifying, which, I mean, for people that don't know, Monday qualifying is a grind.
It is a grind.
You show up on Monday with how many people and you get maybe one spot?
Yeah.
So what progressed next? When was your exit of golf?
So...
And not exit. You're still playing today.
No, but. Yeah, I still play today. Just not that. I just don't pay that much to go play for money. I missed like my last three cuts that year on the mini tours. Not by a lot, but just here and there. So obviously, here comes Q School again. Game's not great, and I didn't play well at Q School. And actually, Lucas's caddy, Don Cooper, caddied for me at Sea Island at the first stage of Q School down there. And we were riding back from the final round. I think my wife was actually in the mountains with some family friends of ours. And I called her, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm not done with golf, but I'm done with professional golf.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I mean, at this point in time, I'm 32 at the time. And like, I had saved up a decent amount of money and supported my own self that year. I mean, with my funds and, you know, kind of exhausted that. And I was like, well, look, like, how many times can I keep going down this road?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had a little time to figure it out.
Do you look back at that as, you know, you think you made the right decision? Is there any regret?
It was the right decision. I mean, had I gotten my game back to where it was pretty good, yeah, but I didn't get it to that level. And those guys are so good. Like, I get it. People always say, yeah, it's a putt here or there. Yeah, maybe. They are really, really good. I mean, so I think at the time it was a great decision, but I still didn't know what I was going to do.
Was there family pressure? Was your wife supporting you to play golf?
She was super supportive.
Yeah.
Like, super supportive. And she knew that was a tough time for me. And couldn't have been more supportive. And she always has been. And so has my family. I mean, I told you my family grew up in golf. I mean, parents, obviously, I'm sure wanted to see their son play on the PGA Tour, which they did one time. But, you know, it was the right time to make that decision now, but I still didn't know what I was going to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, with my life. Golf had been everything pretty much my whole life. It was in some form or fashion. And back at it, you know, I'm still at this point in time, Mark Blackburn was still in my life and still is today. But he called me. He's like, I know you missed Q School. You want to talk? And I was like, yeah. I was like, look, I'm fine. I go, I'm done. He's like, I hear you. Will you go help somebody? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, will you go caddy for Kevin Chappell? I just started working with him and he's about to lose his tour card. Like, it just started working, like, late in the year. And I didn't have anything else to do. So I said, sure. So we started. I worked for Kevin. Back then, that was when they had the fall series that led into, you know, it was like the chase to your card or whatever. When you had to finish in the top 125. It's not like it is now. With the playoffs, so it was a little different. They had those last four events to get your card. I think I'm saying that right. But so we started. I went to work for Kevin Chappell.
He's still playing well now.
He is. He's a little hurt. He's had some back problems since, so he's still kind of getting out of that. But he had some good tournaments this year, kind of getting back at mm-hmm. it. But when I started working for him, he was number 125. So I'd never really caddied in that position, and I was just coming off playing. So I'm like, man, this guy thinks I'm a really good caddy, and I hadn't done it in over a year. But so we did that. We got through on Disney. That was when the last tournament ended up at Disney, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
We were on the last hole and had to make par to keep his card. And you got all the commentators telling you this. I mean, the pressure, because now I'm like, well, man, I was kind of thinking this was going to be my job next year, but like it could easily not be. And we could be on the web.com tour next year. What? Like all of a sudden, thankfully, stripes it down the middle of the fairway on the green. We two putt and we're driving home, or, you know, he's flying out and I'm driving home and we're excited about going into next year. And then that led into, you know, thankfully Mark thought of me and had the confidence in me to help Kevin. And that all of a sudden turned into a phenomenal relationship where I caddied for him for almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of good times. I mean, he's my son's godfather. It was just some really cool experiences with him and getting close to somebody that I really didn't know before.
Yeah. Well, where's Kevin from?
He is from Fresno, California.
All right.
He lives in Scottsdale now.
Completely opposite ends of the world.
Completely.
Country.
Completely.
Live Life in Motion is brought to you by CBDMD. I am very pumped to have CBDMD as a partner. They are the most legitimate CBD company out there. All their products are THC free. They're all third-party tested. Really, they're trusted by a lot of the best athletes in the world. I've used CBD for a long time, and their products at CBDMD are simply the best. I love their gummies. Really, there's a lot of uses for CBD. I like to use it for sleep and really any type of recovery. It really can help inflammation. So go to their site, cbdmd.com, look up some products and use promo code LIVE25 at checkout and you will save 25% off your order. So it's a pretty darn good deal. Go to cbdmd.com, use promo code LIVE25 at checkout and start living healthier.
What was your relationship with Mark? Was he, you know, because he called you and said, hey, I just want to talk. Like, yeah. Was that y'all's relationship?
Oh, for sure. So it had moved from like player teacher to more like player best friend, mm-hmm. almost family, which I consider Mark family now. And we talk almost once a week, still to this day. I still pick his brain about some golf swing stuff here and there. I may have gotten a golf lesson from him this year. But anyway, golf teacher had been really important in my life growing up. Like, that person was very influential in me. Mm-hmm. And more towards a coach, you know. It's more like teachers are one thing. You can go see them, you can pay them, and you can leave. But when they become a coach, they're helping you with more than mm-hmm. just golf, you know.
That's
but
such
whether
a,
you realize it or not.
That's an amazing, like, mm-hmm. when you have a good coach, especially as a kid, they're shaping you not as, you know, a soccer player, a golfer. They're shaping you as a person, which is way more than going to pay somebody $150 to look at my swing for an hour.
Exactly.
With Kevin, so 3 great years.
We had 3 awesome years. Kevin and Mark, they put in a lot of work together, and he came out firing. I mean, he played, I'll never forget it, our first tournament out was the Bob Hope Classic back then. The final round, I think he shot 62. He didn't miss a golf shot. He's one of the best ball strikers to this day I've ever seen through the bag. Driver to wedges. I mean, it's unbelievable. And he's a hard worker. Mm-hmm. And so he deserves every bit of what he's gotten. He is a grinder, but it was impressive when he was on. And, you know, we had some awesome tournaments. We never had any wins. The only win I had caddying was with Bill, his first one, which was actually at the Bob Hope. But Kevin and I had a lot of, you know, he finished second a lot, and I was on the bag for a lot of cool experiences, which gets to Tiger. So I'll tell the Tiger story.
That's been in the back of my head. Yeah.
So I'm still to this day, and I mean, like, Tiger Woods is, you know,
he is
the aura that goes
more than God.
Yeah. I mean, so we're in, this is 2000, I might get the dates wrong, but this is 2013, I believe.
And he's coming off injury, coming off some personal struggles.
Yeah, getting back into it.
I think he won PGA Tour Player of the Year in like 2012, 2013.
One of those years for sure. And so I'm going to mess this up, but it's at Liberty National, which is kind of fresh because they just played that, right? Mm-hmm. We're tied for the lead with Tiger going into Sunday in the final group. I think that's right. Anyway, number one at Liberty National is really, I don't know if they've changed the golf course. So if somebody, you know, hears this, they're like, oh, that's not a hole. Number one at that point in time was a small par four that had a little bunker left of the, on the left side of the fairway. And you'd hit like 4-iron pitching wedge, or these guys would. So we get up there. We finished our warm up. Obviously, people are everywhere. We're playing with Tiger Woods on Sunday. And I'd heard about it, but I'd never really experienced it. Like, he'd play behind us a lot or in front of us with Bill, which was always kind of tricky because of crowds and keeping people quiet. But never been in it. And to be in it is amazing. But we get on the first tee, and I'm sitting there, you know, they're in the tent doing their stuff. I'm getting ready to walk 18 holes with Tiger Woods. So obviously, I'm pretty amped up as well. And, you know, but fired up that my guy gets to play him and, like, let's beat him. Like, let's go. We got a chance to win a golf tournament here. And I look up on the first hole and I'm looking at the numbers, trying to get, like, because Kevin's going to come over to me. He's going, like, how far did, that's our conversation. Like, he'd be like, how far do I need to hit this? I'd tell him, like, we need to land this at 235. Okay. So he walks over and I'm like, I look up and you cannot see the bunkers. The crowds have pushed the ropes in so far. The bunkers on the left side of the fairway, you can't even see. So, like, now the fairway looks a lot smaller than it did prior to Sunday. But, you know, Tiger didn't drive. He was struggling driving the golf ball then. He's still ended up almost having a chance to win. Kevin was leading the golf tournament through 10 holes, playing great. And we get to number 11, I think, which is a par 3. I'll never forget. We hit a 4-iron. Or no, we hit 3-iron, maybe a little right of the green. Kevin didn't get up and down. Actually, ended up making double, which kind of went in a little tailspin and was kind of the end of our tournament for that. But Tiger hit a golf. He hit a 4-iron there and hit a real, like, his low, I guess, stinger, if you want to call it back then. But he flighted this 4-iron down. And when it came off, I mean, my eyes probably got as big as pancakes. I was like, oh, my God. I've never heard a golf shot sound like that. Like, it was amazing. I can't remember how close he hit it, but it was a hard shot. There was a lot of wind. And I was like, yep, there you go. But not a lot of conversation, so I don't have much story to tell about Tiger. Mm-hmm. But he was. I mean, he was in his element. That was a Sunday round of golf wearing Tiger red.
And, yeah.
Actually, that was the same round that you'll see a lot. I was 20 yards from him the time he hits the fairway wood on the par 5 and goes to his knee. I was 20 yards from him.
Dang. Yep. I was about to ask that. I thought that was at Liberty National when he fell to his knees and popped back up.
That was that round. That ball went so far left into a hazard that we didn't even know it was there. But anyway, still he almost had a chance. Like, he fought back and almost had a chance to win that golf tournament, which I was just amazed by because he drove it, you know, for 10 holes, my guy didn't miss a shot. Tiger had hit it all over the place. It just shows you kind of the competitor.
Yeah, and I can remember, man, like, he did that a lot in his career, really, and probably more than we knew, but I can still see that he had, like, the red shirt with the black collar, and, man, that is, like, a very replayed video of T-Dub going to his knees right there. With Kevin, why'd y'all break up?
So, fast forward, we have our first child in 2014, my daughter, Elle, and I was still on the road traveling. I think, you know, that year we'd always go to Malaysia. They'd start that tournament. And I went to Malaysia, I guess that was late 14 because I was at the end of the year. Yeah, she was born in July. And I just remember being so far away and feeling really, really, really far away. Mm-hmm. And that started to creep in a little bit. And I was like, am I going to do this forever? You know, at this point in time, I'm 35 years old. And
so what year is this?
Came back. So this would have been at the end of 14.
Got it. Okay.
Yep. That would have been at the end of 14. And then I worked 15 all up until, let's see, I stopped at Colonial. And that was my last week. I couldn't leave home anymore.
Man, that's the best reason to stop.
Yeah. Still love golf, but like I was playing a bunch.
Yeah.
When I come home. But I couldn't, the travel was wearing me out. And it's not that I love caddying for Kevin. I ended up caddying for him one more time that year. And we finished second at the island. But like all the family was down there. And yeah, it was nothing against him. It was nothing against, you know, it was just life. Changed dramatically.
Did you get in, what was your life after golf?
So I found a job in insurance through a buddy of mine, and which is still today what I'm in commercial insurance.
But I want to talk about TCC in a second.
We're going to get there. So I was still playing. I got my amateur status back. I started playing in some bents. Me and my buddy Greg played some four balls with some success. And then I played in a couple state AMs, finished pretty decent over the years. And then, you know, I was still doing commercial insurance until two of my, some friends of mine that happened to be twins here in Greenville that went to, they ended up, I think they went to J.O. Mann, but they went to South Carolina. And then we always played golf together. Like, Fridays, I played a bunch with some fraternity friends of mine. I was not in a fraternity, but we'd always go to Charwood and play golf and have a really big day. And that's how I got to know Eric and Ross. And, you know, they actually caddied for me some in mini tours after college when they didn't have a job yet. Not that that was a good paying job by any means. But, like, they were really good friends. And we had kicked around a bunch of ideas in golf. And then, you know, in 2018, fast forward a little bit, we decided to start what we call now Traveling Country Club.
Which, now that when we start to explain it, it makes a lot of sense. And I love how golf kind of always comes back in your life in some way or the other. So what is Traveling Country Club, and what was the idea? Were y'all just, you know, having dinner one night and it popped up?
I mean, we had talked about a bunch of different ideas, but we talked about, and I guess some of it comes from all of our love for the game, but what do I really like about golf? Like, I like that I can go, and I grew up this way. Like, I didn't grow up at a country club. Mm-hmm. It was the only golf course in Aynard. So, but we'd go play all over. Like, I'd go play everywhere with these guys. And so part of golf with Traveling Country Club was that, like, let's build something where we can get a bunch of people that have the same passion as we do, and also feed all these other golf courses that we enjoy going to play. Mm-hmm. And, but all, you know, with that being said, let's have a, not, you don't have to use it as a private club per se, but like, let's have a membership where we have events that are like a private club, but, you know, we're going to be able to connect people from all over with, mm-hmm. that all goes back to the same passion and love for golf. And so that was where the heart of it started. It's like, we want to support golf courses and make them as profitable as they can be, but we also want to have something that is a very inclusive membership for anybody, just because we want them to, you know, they love golf, mm-hmm. and we want them to fit into that mold, or not mold, but fit into that setting, I guess you could say.
And it's, I love thinking about it, because I will give friends, like, I'll give them crap if they just play at their club, you know, say they're a member of this club, that's all they play. I'm like, man, you need to get out more. It's like, there's so many more courses than the course you play. What's been the progression of TCC? Like, where are you at now? What's the future? I mean, is this going to be Southeast? Are you looking national, or?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we can spread throughout. I mean, we're going to start spreading out the Southeast. So back to Mark Blackburn. Mark Blackburn's going to run part of TCC in Alabama. He's a big proponent of it and loves what we're doing. And, you know, it's about growing the game. And that seems kind of, you know, cliche, I guess. A lot of people say that. But it truly is. It's like, what can we do to make golf easier for people, make it more accessible for people and for everybody? And that's our goal. It's like, we're gonna move through the Carolinas as we're doing now. I mean, we're in Charlotte, Charleston, Columbia, Myrtle Beach, and yeah, we're gonna.
And to explain,
to grow.
I want to. So, the way it works, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I easily get something wrong. But you have a membership to the Traveling Country Club. It's X amount of dollars, and from that, you get the opportunity to play for a fixed amount at a number of courses,
correct.
Across your area, the state, like you said. I mean, even if you're in Charlotte one day, you still could have a course to go play at.
Mm-hmm. So you're a member, if you're a member of Traveling Country Club, you're a member of whatever golf, or not a member, but you have access to whatever golf course we have, just as anyone else would in those markets. We're obviously an app-based, or I wouldn't say an app-based company, but we have an app that we use as our clubhouse.
Sure.
You know, that's where you get your gear, that's where you check in at the golf course, that's where you communicate with your other members. I mean, I just saw yesterday, like, two guys sent out, like, hey, I got foursome, I need to fill two spots for Saturday. You know, that's how people are getting
It's a community
people.
Based.
It's a community, and that's what we're building, the community of golfers, 100%.
One thing I liked, too, was if you're a member of a club, that one club has one or two courses, you play a member, probably the same course every year. Oh. You guys just had yours down at True Blue in Caledonia.
Yeah.
So you have almost unlimited opportunities, and you're always switching it up. You're finding new courses.
Yeah. And that was what we wanted to do. It's like, we want to show love to the golf courses that we appreciate. Cause I mean, we have some wonderful private clubs here in the Greenville, you know, community, but I love a lot of our other golf courses. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of character to them, which I appreciate. And like, you just want everybody to feel like they're welcome. You always want to feel welcome when you go somewhere to play golf, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the most special things, I think, in golf. You know, it's not the amenities of what the golf course per se has inside its walls, mm-hmm. but when you show up, you want to feel welcome. Mm-hmm. And that's what our community of golfers is, you know.
A perfect example of that could be Lakeview Golf Course, which is close to us here in Piedmont, but it's the story of Lakeview is amazing. It's so welcoming. The owner is always sitting up front talking to you, and you just feel welcome. You feel like they want you there to play some golf. And which I've been telling my fiance, like, you know, she's like, how does golf take X amount of hours? I'm like, listen, babe, I get out on the golf course. Like, it's not just about making a birdie or a par. It's hanging out with your buddies. It's meeting people at the course. It's so much more than sometimes just the score.
100%.
Absolutely. And this, for me, it's almost like meditation. It's like some therapy. It's, mm-hmm. it's all that combined in one. What, how's your golf game now?
It's not bad. It's been better, but it's getting there. Like I said, I had a little tune up lesson, and there was a lot to tune up. It's not bad. I can still play a little bit here and there. So
what about, so you have a daughter?
I do. I have a daughter and a son. My daughter's 7. My son's 5.
Have you gotten a golf club in their hand?
Of course. They've got golf clubs and they play. My son loves it. My daughter likes it. She's more into tennis, which is cool. I didn't grow up with tennis, so it's been kind of cool getting to know that a little bit. But she also likes soccer, so I'm cool with that. But little man likes golf, and he'd go every day if we could. So would I. But
nice. Yeah. All right. I want to pivot a little bit and talk about the current state of golf mm-hmm. in general. On the PGA Tour, we have the Ryder Cup coming off. We have these kind of beasts going on with, say, Bryson and Brooks. Have you been following any of that?
I have followed it. I don't love it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's me being an old head or something.
Traditionalist. You know, or something.
At some point, I mean, as much as I love some of the new stuff in golf, like, I think dress code should be relaxed. I'm not that kind of guy, mm-hmm. but like the beef and the stuff, like, I'm kind of like, this is a gentleman's sport. Like, I go to the golf course, I enjoy everybody I'm around.
Yeah.
I may not like everybody I play with, but they like what I like. Mm-hmm. So they can't be that bad of a guy or girl, whatever. But I don't love that. I guess the beef stuff, I don't really.
Do you think some of that is caused from, didn't they just put into place, if you get some type of interactions or top 10 interactions, you get bonuses, like money bonuses?
Yeah, I believe so. And I also think it's just a product of social media.
It
like
is.
People have more of a voice, and some people like to hear their voice more mm-hmm. through social media about stuff that really doesn't matter per se. But I'm sure some of that bonus structure, you know, they're trying to figure out a way, because it wasn't a small number mm-hmm. in there. I think there was $40 million.
Yeah, tons of money.
Tons of money in there for that.
With the Ryder Cup, the U.S. is traditionally, in my whole life, we've struggled in the Ryder mm-hmm. Cup. I don't know what it is, if we're picking the wrong players for that type of format, but we have a Ryder Cup coming up in 2 weeks, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. In the U.S., we have, of course, the guys that are in there. They played their way in. Do you have some guys that you think we should pick for the team that maybe go against the traditional our way strategy? Like a Kevin Kisner, somebody that dominates some match play.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you have to look that route. I mean, I hate that Phil's not going to be on the team. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always a captain or
yes.
assistant captain. Now, I don't know if, you know, that means he's not going to get picked or not, but, you know, or play. But, you know, I hate to not see him, because that means kind of his tenure's done now, mm-hmm. which is an unbelievable legacy he's had. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to turn down guys that are scrappy fighters, you know, like a Kevin Kisner, who makes a lot of putts. He's never going to give up, you know. Needless to say, the guys that have made a team have made it for a reason. Like, they made it because they play good, and so have mm-hmm. the guys that are kind of, you know, just barely outside. They've played some really good golf, but it's definitely a different atmosphere. One, we don't play a lot. I think there's one match play tournament a year.
It's in New Orleans or something, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess as a captain, it's got to be one of the most difficult jobs there's ever been. I know Davis loves caddy. He's a good friend of mine. So obviously Davis has been a Ryder Cup captain. And I mean, I talked to him a decent amount, and he's like, I've never seen Davis. So, you know, it's a stressful week for those guys making those big decisions.
Yeah.
For golf.
They're life decisions for these people. I mean, like you said, you had a goal to play on the PGA Tour. These are life goals for some of these individuals. So. Yeah.
So I'll be anxious to see how this year works. I mean, my partner in Traveling Country Club just played Whistling Straits yesterday and said it was pretty phenomenal. So I'm anxious to see the golf course. I caddied the PGA there with Bill 1 year, and it's a beautiful track. Mm-hmm. So it should be fun, and I'm glad fans are back. But you're right. I mean, I think there definitely are some people that should get a look that maybe don't because of their points. But
yeah. You know what I'm excited about is the President's Cup is coming to Charlotte, I think, next year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's going to be awesome. It'd be nice to have something that close to us, because I've never been to one of those events. Never caddied in one of them, President's or Ryder Cup. I did every major, so that was pretty cool. But to see one of those and on a grandstand, because that's a lot of people watching just a few people play golf, which is really neat.
With the state of golf with the younger golf seems to be in a really good place right now. Mm-hmm. Is there been – who do you like? Is it Colin Morikawa? Is it –
I definitely like watching his game. He is very talented, hits it really pure. Trying to think, you know, like I'm happy that Jordan Spieth kind of got his stuff back and playing better golf. He's always been fun to watch just because he makes so many putts, and I like people that make putts. It's fun to watch.
His short game too is absurd.
It's unbelievable. So you know, there's a guy that puts a lot of time into it, which is awesome. But I mean, the state of golf is, you know, even though Tiger's out right now for times.
He'll be back,
I hope. But times, you know, where you think it would be not as, there's a lot of hype in golf right now. And just even, you know, get outside the PGA Tour level. I mean, golf is booming right now. Mm-hmm. It is incredible amount of golf rounds that are being played right now. And it's awesome. It just shows we're doing something right to get younger people more involved. I mean, not to just go back to Traveling Country Club, but our average age is like 31 years old for our membership.
That's amazing if you think about a country club membership.
Yeah. So that's a young age being introduced more into golf, which probably 10 years ago really wasn't that. I just think younger people think golf's a little bit cooler now than they used to.
It is. And, you know, I think another thing, other athletes in other sports have been picking up golf. Which, you know, if you're an athlete, if you're a basketball player and all of a sudden you see Andre Iguodala playing golf, you're like, hey, maybe golf is cool, you know. And it's transitioning to different ethnicities and different people playing the game. As we are wrapping up here, I have the hardest question, right? If you could tell somebody starting out or somebody struggling with their game, what are some simple tips or things you could focus on to improve their game?
So I guess that's I'll answer that in two parts. I think one part right now, there's a big distance. Everybody wants to hit it 18,000 miles right now. Is that great? It's cool if you can. But I just think there's a lot of other more important things to golf. And like, I still harp back on, like, if you can develop a sound short game at a young age, you can develop the rest. I'm not saying you don't need to try to hit it further, but
you probably pound the ball.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I used to hit it far when I was growing up. So like, distance wasn't a thing for me. I was always trying to find the fairway.
Yeah.
But having a good short game, you can build a lot around that if you're young and getting into it. Or even if you're an amateur just starting, like, you don't know how many strokes you give away just around the green. But if you're struggling through something, I think it's best if you just, like, if you can just pick one thing. Like, let me improve on this one thing. And if I can improve on that and get that right, then maybe go on to something else. But trying to, because I've done it, it doesn't work. I mean, if you have 10 thoughts going on in your head when you're trying to make a golf swing, you're barely going to get through one to two of them, and then the rest of them are just going to mess everything up. So, you know, just try to do one thing right, you know?
Is there one thing you see or something common you see in amateur golfers that they're doing wrong? Like maybe their grip or their stance, takeaway?
Most of it, I mean, honestly, most of it's alignment. Like some people just don't line up very well, and they don't take time because that's the basic thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like if you can just learn to line up pretty good, you solve one problem, and then you can figure out the rest. But if you don't know where you're lining up, then how do you know where you're really going to try to hit it?
Yeah.
So I you see that a lot in some guys. And I mean, there's good players that line up differently, right? But like they do it for a reason because they figured something else. They didn't just start doing it that way, you know? So that would be my biggest thing.
Well, Michael, thank you for coming. This has been amazing. We share the love of golf, and now we can call each other friends. And absolutely, we got to play some golf now.
That's right.
Go Gamecocks,
that's
too.
That's right, this weekend. We'll see what we got.
Well, thank you a lot for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, click subscribe on your listening platform for upcoming conversations.